Hello and welcome to the Born and Wellen podcast. My name is Blake Bettner. We are in studio and I'm joined by Zach Weiss. Zach, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
It feels like it's been a minute, but Zach Kazan, you are also here. Zach, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we are, of course, joined by our producer, Josh. Josh, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Staying cold. It's very hot here in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Today.
It's the theme of the day.
This week, yeah.
Scorcher.
We have a fun topic today, and it's one that Zach and I took on solo a few weeks back, and you listeners had a lot to say about this. So we put up a brief editorial last week, and we each kind of gave a stab at our thoughts on the Grail Watch and what that term means to us. And there was a pretty good discussion in the comments there. And then we asked for your thoughts on it on our Instagram stories, and we got a wealth of responses. So thank you to everyone who wrote in. We will dive into that momentarily. Before we do, are any of you wearing a Grail watch? What's on your wrist? Zach, Zach Weiss, what's on your wrist?
How did you know I had my one and only Grail? No, right now I have on the Worn and Wound Ex-Christopher Ward C65 Sandstorm that we released last winter. To be honest, I had a different watch on earlier, and then I threw this on because it'd been a little while. And it's a good watch for a hot day because it's lightweight, it's pretty slim. I have it on a Paprika Adapt strap, so that's Paprika, soaking okay. in my sweat right now.
Well, that's what they're for, right?
The
natives. I was just going to ask exactly. what color that was.
A paprika. Yeah, okay. I think it's a dark. I mean, I literally just walked about 3 miles to get here, so it's a few shades darker than it was when I left.
No, I like that watch.
Thank you.
I wear mine, I think, at least once every other week or so. It's just such an easy watch to wear around.
Yeah, whatever credit we can take for designing the dial aside, the case and is all Christopher Ward, and that 30mm light catcher case is just like really, really sharp, and it wears so well. Very thin, very really nice angles on it, so it looks even thinner than it wears.
Yeah, it's an easy one to wear. We've had the black one hanging around the office for the last couple of weeks, and that one has like really grown on me.
Yeah.
A lot. And I really like the dial on that one too. Nice job on that one. Zach Kazan, what are you wearing?
I'm wearing a watch that I have in for review currently. It's the Delft Watchworks Oostport with the translucent dial. So I'm putting the finishing touches on that review, which will be up on the site at some point in the relatively near future. Really enjoying this watch. It's a very cool design, unique design for a watch at this price point. More to come on that.
Yeah, I look forward to that one. We saw it briefly when it was in the office, and was quite impressed with the case in particular of that watch.
Yeah, the case is very unexpected.
The case is very cool. Yeah.
Josh, what do you got over there?
Well, even though I'm a connoisseur of cheap watches, I'm wearing my DW5600, so I wouldn't say that this is, even though I'm a cheap person, this is not my Grail watch.
Love it. Hey, isn't that the watch that Keanu Reeves wore in Speed?
Actually, yeah. So. Cool. This is my everyday beater watch, which is wonderful. I love this watch.
Love it.
Awesome.
So I'm wearing a watch that maybe at one time I would have called the Grail. Maybe like 10 years ago. This is a Linda Wirtlen Spido Light 2. It's titanium. It's got the cloth strap on there. Despite its considerable size, it's pretty light on the wrist. Very light on the wrist, actually. In fact, I walked all the way over here, and it's not even sweaty yet. So there you go. Yeah, imagine that. It's
a cool watch.
It's cool. It's like cartoonish in like a good way. Which is fun. So I don't wear this watch terribly often, but when I do, I really enjoy the experience of it. And it might be considered a Grail watch to some people. I know definitions are kind of all over the map on that, but there are, I think, 80 of these that were ever made.
Oh, wow.
And they're a little pricey at MSRP, so a little tricky to get your hands on it. This was a limited edition one, so even more so. But you have heard what we have to say about Grail watches. If you didn't read the editorial, both Zach Kazan and Zach Weiss and myself all gave our kind of brief thoughts. And we did this independent of each other. Like, I think we all wrote it without reading mm-hmm. the others. So I don't know if there's any, I don't think there's anything too conflicting in there. But I mentioned in mine a thread that was made on the Rolex forums on this very topic as well, and pointed out a comment that that really resonated with me on it. And it seemed that I saw kind of a similar sentiment come through in some of the comments as well. And so I guess we can just kind of jump into it. Do you guys want to clarify anything that you wrote in the editorial after reading everything that came in?
Oh, geez. I mean, I don't know if I have changed my mind at all. I was just kind of thinking, honestly, on the way over here a little bit more about the idea of grails and what a concept, what a funky concept it is. And, you know, there's so many ways to define it, obviously, and none of them are wrong. So yeah, it's a thing. Yeah. It's really whether or not you want to go for it as like the idea of like an ultimate or a pinnacle or most expensive or most rare or, you know, something like that. Or you know, I think some of our posts, I know mine and I think believe yours in the what you reference is sort of it becomes about the journey, not the not the end point, which I think is the most perhaps romantic and one we can associate with. But I just, you know, starting to think about one that I kind of wish I had written about, which is like, you know, no one ever got into the kind of mystical side of things, right?
The mystical side of things.
Like the grail in Indiana Jones wasn't something that they like, it wasn't like the ultimate aesthetic version of a thing. It was this thing that had actual like ultimate like magical properties. So perhaps the grail is like not something you can even think about. It's like the unknown Breguet watch that stops time. Or something, you know, like
I like the concept of it being about. So first of all, let's take a step back and address something you just said. This is very subjective. We are not the end all be all of like, this is what a grail watch is.
You're not going to come away with an answer.
We're not here to like you know, say, you know, this is what it is and this is what you have to abide by. I think one of the great parts about this is that a lot of you had just your own meaning behind it and how you assign meaning to that term and your own collecting journey or process. And that's great. You keep doing you. So I think that's, it's important mm-hmm. to note that, you know, and second, I like that concept of the mystical, but again, one of the comments, so we can jump right in. One of the comments here from GMT Chrono Dive. If we are going by Indiana Jones, isn't the grail one that has zero material worth and hides amongst lavish imitations? If that's right, that's probably a Casio F91W. But the first part of what he's saying, I think, is, you know, it's not.
Well, I think that, and that, you know, I just made me think really quickly, like that. So your grail watch, let's say it's the watch that your grandmother told you about, that your grandfather had in 1930 and got lost somewhere, and like maybe it's out there. And have you ever found that one watch? And maybe it's a watch of no actual monetary value. Like that sounds like a really reasonable grail kind of concept too.
And like the grail in the movie, it's not like the beautiful one there that the baddie chose, right? Like he was looking for like the gem set one, pure gold, and all that. Like, oh, it's extravagant. But you know, this was like the most plain, you know, wood looking. And I think
it was a carpenter.
It was a carpenter. Yeah, right. So the OG JC. I think there is something to that, and I like that concept, and it's the meaning that it has been imbued with, right?
Yeah.
Because of what it's been through, right? And I think that's and maybe that's GMT Chrono Dive, the Casio F91W. There you go. It's simple, but maybe it's got a lot of meaning for him, which I like. And that kind of circles back to the comment that I referenced in my piece of editorial when I talked about that. The commenter, Zach Kazan, I know you read it. I kind of forwarded it to you like right away, right? Like, and the guy had referenced the Paramico talking watches that Hodinkee did, talking about a specific watch that he wasn't sure if it even existed. Like he'd heard tales that maybe it was commissioned by Patek, but there's no real confirmation that kind of journey of discovering like, oh, did it exist? And nobody really knows yet. Like that's a real like mystery. That's fun. And I like it because it detaches the concept of a grail watch to like something that you need to own and buy and cost money. Mm-hmm. It's like the process of just it exists, like it's finding it, right? And that kind of
it's not about Jones. Yeah, it's less about like obtaining something and more about just like acquiring knowledge and like diving deeper into the hobby. But I like the idea of kind of like not even knowing if the watch you're looking for exists. I think that like that sort of is kind of like the ultimate grail, because like how do you even begin to look for a watch that you don't know if it actually exists? It opens up all these other questions about how we you know, how we collect and how we you know, how we learn about these things, you know, within the hobby itself.
I still think also like within that though is still the premise of like rarity. Obviously it is down to like there is a one or not even perhaps greater than zero or something amount, which, you know, I like the idea of as well, because I guess, you know, something I was kind of talking about in mine was like the idea that like the grail is a thing that can't really exist, because it's sort of like you have to, the process of collecting is the process of defining what it is. Maybe you'll never even get there. That's one version, but I like this version that it's out there. And then should you be seeking that? Like, I like the idea that there's, you'll have one moment in your life to get it or something, right? Like, it'll pass through one auction and nobody else will know about it or something. Or like, it'll be in that one store in a, you know, a window, dusty jewelry store window in Italy or something like that, you know? And you have to be ready at that moment.
That really stresses me out. I have anxiety just even thinking about that, as someone who like is very deliberative about every watch purchase, whether it's like a few hundred bucks or like, you know, a much more expensive watch. Like I really like I weigh everything like very carefully, and the idea of like having to like jump on something like, you know, when you have the chance, like that gives me a lot of anxiety. But that's something that like you have to deal with as a collector when you're interested in vintage watches, especially because you know, sometimes like you really have to make a split second decision on a watch like that.
This ties into the concept of like a soulmate. Like, there's like one significant other out there for me, and you know, you see somebody on the train that you like have a little crush on just in the train ride, and then you're like, was that the person that I was like meant to spend the rest of my life with, but then they just like walked out. I think they're like, I think the concept of it just being like a personal thing, and that's an easy way to get in hot water, I think, too, when you think that way. Not just for the implications of chasing after people on the train, but of like...
Well, I like also that train snare sort of implies that the watch is looking for you as well.
I guess on the watch part, you know, the
if it's meant to be, you'll find each other.
Yeah, it'll happen. You can't force these things, right?
Also, like, don't like chase after people on the train, please.
Yeah, no.
Yes, I know. Do not.
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Especially if you like their watch. Don't be like, you have a great watch, and we're soulmates. We're not going to go your way.
Soulmate? You mean? Yeah. The real grail is the friends we made along the way, too, right?
Cue the music.
Yeah.
Heartwarming.
I think there's something inherently like personal about this that I think a lot of people touched on in here. Our friend Catlin from 10 and 2 said you can have multiple grails over time based on where you are in your collecting journey. And I know that there's a lot of comments that kind of echo this same sentiment, that, you know, this is it's associated with a goal that you have set for yourself, and you might eclipse it, you might reach it, and then it's always kind of moving, or as your tastes change, it changes along with you, and it's just like a personal thing, however you define it. And then it's just like, you know, the words have the meaning that we all assign to them, and it's this, and it gets back to the, this might mean something to you, that, you know, the forum people might get a little like, you know, grails this, you know, but if it means something to you, like if it gives you kind of like a North Star in your collecting journey, then it has value to you. And I think that's a good thing, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Right. Do you guys have that in your own? Do you guys have that in your
life? I think right now I do have one watch that's like that. I've referred to it before, and this is not a very Zach Weiss watch, but maybe it is, I don't know, the Patek 3940. And I think the reason, and why I'll stand by why that is like that watch for me right now, is because at least in the last like year or so, starting with the Grand Seiko and then the Louis Rarity picked up, like they're getting those watches and actually wearing them, trying them, like there is something greater in the experience of those watches than just an aesthetic experience, which I can't say about every watch I've bought in the last year. I mean, some of them are just fun watches that I like, and so it goes. Nothing wrong with them, but like there's something kind of more about those other two, and it's a me thing. They resonate with me in a deeper way, right? And so there's something about the 3940, which I have yet to try on. I've never actually seen one in the metal. I've only seen photos on Instagram, but just the simplicity of it, yet the complexity of the movement and the 36 millimeter case. Like, I feel like that watch has a sort of aesthetic transcendent property potentially for my wrist. I don't know. So that is, and it's, I mean, outrageously expensive and et cetera. So it's like, it's not like I can walk out and get one today. So right now it is definitely a far away goal in terms of financially obtaining it. But then, yeah, perhaps I'll get it. It won't resonate. Move on to the next one. Perhaps it will, but then, the tourbillon thing might kick in. Who knows?
This is a case of maybe you don't want to meet your heroes type of thing. Yeah, yeah. There's always that risk.
It's like, oh no, this watch is a jerk.
But if you don't, you don't know, right? Yeah. It's just, and maybe it's that mystical thing that you were talking about, right? It transcends the practical nature of the anesthetic of it. And so what about you, Zach Kazan? Do you have anything like this that kind of guides you in how you collect?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know. Like, there are definitely watches that I would like to own someday, watches that I really kind of like love from afar. But I try to like remain open to anything, like, you know, doing what we do for a living. Like, we see so many watches kind of like, you know, come into our inbox, and like some of them like really kind of like strike my fancy, and like I go down rabbit holes. Maybe I don't end up seeking out those watches, but there are like watches that are kind of like tangentially related to them that are interesting to me, and that sets me down like another path. So I don't know that there's like one watch that sort of like guides everything to me. Like, I've got a very long like mental list of watches that are interesting to me that sort of inform like those watch recon alerts and like the decisions that I make along the way.
Yeah. Well, you said something interesting, Zach Weiss, and that is the 3940, and you referred to it as maybe not a very Zach Weiss watch, but it was still a watch that you kind of like put there that you want to experience. And I think that this is, I would suspect that this is the case for a lot of people's so-called grails, right? It's a watch that's like, maybe it's beautiful in its own way. It's maybe like pricey, but you rarely think of it in the kind, like if you actually like opened your watch box and looks at like the style of watches that you find yourself like catering to. And then it's a big disconnect from like, oh, well, that watch, that's a grail, it's a Richard Mille or whatever, but I only wear and really kind of like these types of watches when it's very different from this. And it kind of forces you to maybe think about like, well, why is that? Why is this? That's very different from my taste over here. Why do I put this up on a pedestal? And I think you would really like that watch in the flesh. And I do think it does suit your, like, knowing you.
Thinking about it, I mean, obviously I wouldn't have any interest in it if I didn't already have some sort of resonation, that's not a word, you know, if I didn't relate to it in some way aesthetically, or, you know, I mean the lore of it and everything. But, you know, so the reason why I said maybe it's not a very me watch is because it is sort of like a more delicate dress watch. Like, the smaller watches I have, 36 millimeter watches, etc., tend to be a little bit more robust and sporty, like Nomos Club or whatever, or hyper minimal, you know, like a Stova Antia or Younghans Max Bill. So those are kind of like my watches that are the same size as that. And I don't know why I'm like, I don't know. It's like a dressy kind of fine watch. It's also made of precious metal. Yeah. But perhaps it's because when you get to that grail, there is also a new you at that point, right? So what is the me at that point when I get there? Is this a Zach Weiss who wears, a nice tweed blazer from the armory every day? I'm not opposed to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the other part of it. Like, the grail that you're shooting for is where you want to be. What's the Michael Scott quote? You don't shoot to where the player is. You shoot to where the player is going to be. Or Michael, or Wayne Gretzky. Sorry. Sorry, it was a little office.
Was that a humor. deep office
Michael
cut?
Scott,
I might have missed that
Wayne
one.
Gretzky.
Michael Scott quoting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you aim for where you think you're going to be, and maybe in, you know, you've sold a couple businesses in 20 years, right. And you're like, okay, I've got, you know, that's where you're going to be, and you'll be wearing 3940s all day, and or 3970s or 5970, or, you know, whatever it is. You know, maybe you've got a whole collection of complicated Pateks over there.
Wow.
And yeah, and that's just your life then.
That's just my life then.
I think, like, when I was I like the original Datagraph quite a bit, like a whole lot of other people out there, right? I like the size of it. I like the dial. And it's a watch that has, like many watches, has just gone up, like, in price to pretty obscene amounts. But there's always something that I find. Obviously, it's a beautiful watch. I like the story of that watch. The movement is obviously gorgeous. If I stop and think and I look at all the watches that I actually own, I think, oh, if I had a Datagraph, would I ever wear it? Because in the context of my life right now, it would just, like, feel so out of place a bit, I think. And I think, and there's something in here to that effect too, that somebody had written down, but, like, let's see here. Where is, I got to find this comment now. Let's see here. Any watch? Well, it never a firm horizon. It changes as you and your tastes evolve. That's a part of the fun. Mr. Alex Brock. Yeah, that's another one. But at any rate, like, I think it's, you know, oh, you get there, and then, like, you know, you're the dog that chases the, you know, the car, and you don't know what to do when you catch it, kind of thing. Like, well, what now? And then to your point, you know, well, where do we go from here? You know?
Yeah. Well, that's why the movies never start with them having the Grail.
Yes, yeah. It's the end point. Yeah. Josh, do you have a Grail? Is this concept ever crossed your mind?
I mean, actually, I've been thinking about it a lot recently.
Really?
Okay. I'm really trying to find a watch that to really connect with. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, I would say I kind of have my Grail watch as of right now. I don't really have, like, one that I'm like thinking of for the future or anything like that, or something that I want to obtain. Largely because, like, most, like, for example, like your Pateks or like anything else that's, like, really expensive, like, most of those watches don't really appeal to me, not only because I'm a broke individual, but also because like a lot of, like, you know, your Rolexes, your Tudors, your Grand Seikos, like, they're not really, I don't really see myself in those watches, like, just in terms of, like, the style and the design and stuff like that. But, like, the Timex Q reissue that I got from you guys, like, I love that watch.
Yeah.
Like, that watch really suits me very, very well. And to me, like, that's really what I care about more so than anything else, is that the watch that I have at any point, and, like, whatever, there should be one watch in my collection at all times right now that really suits me at wherever I'm at. And who knows, I might get a more expensive watch, you know, later on or something like that. Yeah, but, like, for me, it's like the Grail watch is the one that you are at any moment in time.
That's an interesting perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And it's something that, and that, again, it kind of detaches it from, you know, like, it has to be this really expensive, like, hard to get thing, but it's a personal thing that you know what it is, right? And that may be different for all of us, and how we go about, like, getting there is different. And it, you know, I think that, and maybe, you know, to the earlier point, it kind of informs your collecting. But yeah, no, that's a great point, Josh. I like that. There's another concept here that I thought was interesting. This commenter wrote in at AJ Greco. It's all in specs. And then he lists out, like, this is my perfect, like, list of specs of, like, what he wants in a watch. So that removes it from price, from brand, from whatever. Like, he's looking for... And I guess that's a personal thing too, because that's going to be different for every person. Like, he wants watches size like this, that's this thick, that's got, like, these features in it, this much water resistance, and that's like his Grail watch. So I guess you could just outline, this is perfect for me, and then look at any watch that fits that. Is that a Grail then? I guess that removes, like, do I have to like the way it looks? Do I have to like the brand?
I mean, for once me, again, watches are so much about, like, aesthetics, and I find that, like, the specs, especially around, like, water resistance and, you know, things like that, like, you know, or size, like, you know, to the millimeter, like, at the end of the day, like, over the long term, things like that don't really matter too much. Like, it's about how a watch makes you feel. And those, those might be a good starting point for, like, for finding a watch. But, yeah, I mean, it's like, to look for a Grail based purely on specs is not something that I'd ever really thought about before seeing that comment.
I mean, once again, you define it however you'd like to. So if that is how they wish to define it, so be it. But I, you know, I do think the ideal versus grail are a little bit different for me. I mean, yeah, I could define right now probably what I'd want for a perfectly comfortable watch, you know, but like, but then it could maybe go out and get it. I don't know. That just, that seems like a little bit dissonant with like the idea of the quest and everything, you know?
Yeah.
Also, it might challenge that you even really know, right?
If the specs like reflect like, your aesthetic, I can understand it in that sense, but
it's tough because yeah. I think you're intentionally like kind of leaving yourself out of the game of potential great watches. And the watch that I'm wearing right now, if you just ask me, oh, what kind of watches do you like to wear? I could give like a rough estimation of like, well, watches that are kind of like this. This isn't like that yep. at all. It's completely out of the, you know, but I still like it, yeah. you know, to Zach's point. Like, it's hard to define it just based on those numbers, right?
And it also, like, I think it kind of might work against you in that you'd be surprised by things that are outside of those norms. Like, so,
yeah,
my Grand Seiko SPGA 375, which is in the 44GS case, on paper, that watch doesn't sound good, at least not how I wanted it, right? It's a 40mm watch that's a little bit larger than I really like to wear, especially on an everyday or kind of dressier watch. It's 12.5-ish millimeters thick. That's a little chunky. I love it. I could wear it every day. If all my other watches disappeared and I had that one on my wrist, I mean, I'd be extremely depressed, but or at least I'd have a really good watch that I like to wear. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's that's important to note. And just in general, like when you read reviews from us or from whoever, like, the numbers are one thing, but they're not everything,
no,
right?
No.
And we can put numbers to the nth degree on every little thing. In fact, Zach and I were on Slack talking about. So I was trying to describe the difference between the old 36mm Explorer and the new 36mm Explorer in dimensions, because the new one has a 19mm lug span, the old one has a 20mm lug span. So I looked up the golden ratio. And I tried to kind of put some numbers around this. So I averaged the ratio of the case diameter to the width of the lug to the taper of the bracelet. And it came up very close to the golden ratio, like 1.61. And it was like right there. And then I plugged the same numbers in from the prior 36mm Explorer, and it was like a bit further off. So we may have stumbled onto something there.
That's Rolex's design secret. They're coming for you.
But I was like, that's
overlay the Explorer on a picture of the Mona Lisa.
But it's like, there are things that are like, it's hard to put your finger on, like in how all these things kind of relate to each other and how that translates on the wrist.
Proportions are really hard to describe without experiencing. I had a colleague at a design firm years ago who had a theory, an untested theory, but that like, why sort of like European furniture versus American furniture had this sort of different look, and European furniture being a little bit more colder and more austere and severe. And he thought it was could relate to the metric system, and that, you know, your fractions are much smaller, you're in tenths and such. Whereas in, you know, good old imperial, it's like it's halves, you know, you go inch, half inch, quarter, you know, and it's kind of that result. This was completely untested, but I think there's like something potentially to that in some way, right? It's sort of like the American design stuff had a certain like big bluntness to it, like rounded edges. It was softer, you know. Think of like the cars and things that came out of the U.S. versus you know, Italy or whatever. Like, one is harsh and more angular, and then we had big bussy looking, you know, rounded shapes. Kind of,
there you go. There's another there's a chalk one up for the old freedom units. I'm kidding. I like the metric system.
We actually use metric almost exclusively at work. But
that's funny. I think I think there's a lot to be said for that. And obviously, like, the designer's intent behind it is a lot of it as well. And, you know, I think, you know, if you look at watches like MB&Fs and Orworks and stuff like that, those look like, that might be like pretty uncomfortable to wear on the wrist. You know, whereas like if it's a watch that is trying to have as broad of appeal as possible, then they're going to want it to fit as many wrists as possible and all that kind of jazz. So I don't know. I think the point is, at the end of the day, it's like a personal thing, and like what you can wear, what feels good on your wrist is, you know, it's hard for people like us to tell you that. I mean, we can try and quantify it as best as we can, but it's really like a qualitative experience, right, at the end of the day, that you have to come to terms with, basically, if you're going to keep it in your collection. All right, let's get to some more, let's get to some more comments. Let's see here. Maddie's 146, a watch that has real significance to whether that is because of its value or meaning, right? So, so that, yeah, I think, yeah, it, it's significant because of perhaps the meaning that it has there, you know? Absolutely. Let's see here. Hey Jicky says, easy phrase to indicate a watch you aspire to have, probably overused today though. So that's, mm-hmm. that's another one. I think a lot of people express some, consternation about the use of the term in like yep. a forum setting.
Yeah. I was noticing one right here. Another guy, especially hey guy says it's used too liberally. Shouldn't see, finally got my grail as often as we do in forums, which
is all the time, yeah. right? It's like, oh, yep. my, you know,
constant
got my grail or got the call or whatever. And it's kind of like a thumbing your nose in it a little yeah. bit. I don't know. Like
it's the first reply. Now what?
Yeah. To all now those.
Do you feel empty?
Yeah. like, yeah. We're, yeah. Exactly. So yeah. Let's see here. And then we'll work for a Credor.
Interesting.
What a username. It's a moving target. It's somewhere out there. If your grail isn't changing, you've stopped growing.
I like that's that a good one. Point, I yeah. Think. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's, I think, something that we've touched on a little bit here. Like, and I know, and I think something that we all kind of alluded to in our editorial, that this is something that, mm-hmm. you know, if you're honest with yourself, and it's okay for your tastes to change, and your grail should not be like cemented in stone. You know, and that's just fine. Let's see here. A watch you really like, but isn't easily obtained. Pure unobtainium. We'll be lucky to even see one in my lifetime, let alone own one. So there's a lot that kind of have that the similar, like mm-hmm. it's just completely aside associated to like its rarity there. So
and that one, that's the double-edged sword, because that is also like the, you know, don't meet your heroes kind of a thing. So if, yeah. if your grail is something that potentially could be at, you know, at some auction someday, and you can go and preview it, and then you might see it and be like, oh, yeah.
Now yeah, like it shouldn't appeal to you because yeah. it's rare or because it's expensive. Like if you like it, it should stand on its own. If mm-hmm. it's cheap, rare, not rare, not expensive, whatever, it's just something that you like. Right, so I guess that's another side of the equation. Like if you like what you were saying, Josh, you know, well, this is what I like, and you know, the rarity and price and all that kind of stuff, like that doesn't sway me towards other watches alone, right? Like it has to be something that you like, and are we capable of separating those two things from mm-hmm. the watches that we like? You know, like do we like watches from brands that have like built-in quote-unquote prestige about them? Mm-hmm. Like, does that heighten our appreciation because of the brand has like a lore that we associate with it, like Credor, you know,
mm-hmm.
or Rolex marketing for better, you know, whatever, yeah. whatever. There's a lot of that kind of stuff that's built in, and some of it more artificial than other. but I think there is a bit of that that kind of pulls you in, that you start, you know, like, oh, that's when you really start kind of associating different emotions with it, because you place a lot of value on those yeah. things behind it, which is okay. It's mm-hmm. not like it's a bad thing. But I think it muddles the waters a little bit when it comes to like, well, why do I like this watch? Is it because I'm like built in predisposed to like this brand for XYZ reasons? You know, like Christopher Nolan movies. Right? Like you can't just say, oh, I'm going to like it because he did it. You know, it can't be.
I feel like, yeah, I'm kind of like, this is making me think about like a Philip DeFour simplicity or something like that. Because I feel like there's so much lore about Philip DeFour and who he is in the industry yeah. and his skills and how hard it is to get one of those watches, and then how expensive they are if they come up at auction. And it's really only like an elite handful of people that it can like ever get them, let alone really see them. These are not watches you will run into even at a meetup with elite collectors. Like they might not even yeah. take these watches out. And yet, so like never knowing beyond the photographs, and like I'll say from the photographs, like, I mean, I understand how important and significant this watch are. They're not the most appealing to me. on Earth. But maybe it's beyond that, and you have to see it to even get it, or it's you're not even get it. It's because it's the modern master that it's, but you know, like,
that's okay though. That's I think yeah, it should be okay to say like, hey, no, it's just, all okay. I don't particularly care for that aesthetic. I appreciate the work that he did,
but maybe it's a grail because I don't even maybe I don't even know it's a grail. Damn it, you know.
I think that the appeal of that watch in large part, or you know, or any watch that's like, you know, handmade by a master watchmaker, you know, we can all list, you know, like a handful of, you know, like kind of like living master watchmakers that like still, you know, make watches by hand. And I think like the appeal there really is the rarity, but it's like it's true rarity because like they are making them, you know, like in their workshop by hand, and they make like, you know, 10 watches a year, and like they're rare because they're hard to make, and it's not like a, you know, like a Submariner is rare from an authorized dealer because they're, you know, they exist purely on the gray market. That's a different kind of rarity that's like way less appealing. But like there's like a certain amount of prestige and exclusivity that I think is like honestly appealing with like a Philippe Dufour or, you know, like a Kari Buttalainen or, you know, some like very like, you know, like a handcrafted thing that's rare because it's like actually difficult to produce and make.
Yeah, that's a good point. And especially in relation to the Submariner, because that's a watch that like you probably see a lot and you see it on your Instagram feed and you know it's hard to get and it's built up into this thing. And it's expensive, but you might be able to like save up for a while and buy one, or you just have the money and you can find one somewhere. You eventually get the call. And, you know, a lot of what you're hyped about is the hype around it that you see. Mm-hmm. And then like, if you weren't honest with yourself, you might get it and just be like, oh, well, why do I have to wear this thing every day? Like, I have to like it, right? And that's a totally different story than the you know, the gray market demand and the hype and the social media, all that kind of stuff. All that stuff just goes out the window, right, when you actually have it. And I guess that feeds into it. I think there's a few other comments in there that was like, you know, that kind of takes the fun out of the hop. But like, if you have... You know, if you're Jeff Bezos and you can like just get whatever you want anytime, like would it be any fun? Like there has to be something else that drives you other than...
You don't think him with the cowboy hat after coming down from space, that didn't look like a man who just had some fun?
Man, yeah, I tell you what. But where do you go? Where does he go from there? Literally,
yeah.
You
know? Next stop, Mars.
But like, if you
he can
get
go
it,
back into space, that's fine. Yeah.
But I think that touches on like the original, like that comment that I pointed out of the journey of discovering things that maybe you didn't know existed, or that kind of keeps you plugged into the hobby in a different way than just like, I'm chasing after this and I'm like saving up money to buy it. And then I buy it. And then like, maybe that's not just going to fulfill you like owning it. Right. Like that in and of itself, but the process of like learning about that lore or discovering watches you didn't know existed or engaging with other parts of the community to talk about this. I know this, like over the last few years, this has kind of been playing out, not to go back to the Explorer again, but with the first watch that was on the summit of Everest, right? You know, was it the Explorer or was it the Smiths? And this is something that's been like bickered about for ages, right? Mm. And there's proofs of varying degrees on either side, but then like just recently it's been thanks to this guy Matthew Knight like pretty well established that it was the Smiths that went up actually to the summit with him. And you know Rolex doesn't like say the Everest was or the Explorer was the first on Everest or anything like that. It's like kind of implied in their marketing, right? Like they show the picture of it there and they sent the watch and all this kind of stuff. And I don't know, like this kind of like built up artificiality, but anyways, like the actual process of figuring all that stuff out, which really just came down to the individuals in the community, which I thought was a really awesome thing. And when you see that kind of stuff happen to me, that's like what I really enjoy. Like you fall into that rabbit hole and it's like kind of actively playing out in front of you. And you know, people are looking for living descendants of this person or that person and trying to get to the bottom of things. Or the blueberry bezel on the 1675 is another one. Like, all of those are like really interesting things that bring parts of the community together. Sometimes it gets heated and all that kind of stuff. But like, to me, that's like what makes a large part of this hobby like really interesting. And that is a part of the journey to me, right? Like, I have an Explorer and I don't get like, I don't like, oh, this is the watch that summited Everest for the first, like, I don't care about it like that. I don't care what celebrities are wearing it. And that's not why at the end of the day, we should be liking these things, which we've kind of talked about, but yeah, I don't know. Like, what do you guys think? Is it, you know, where do you go from there? It has to be about something more than just the getting it.
Yeah. I think it's good that you don't walk up to people and say, this is the watch that summited Everest. Like that's, definitely shouldn't do that. But yeah, I mean, of course there's more to it than just like the stories that the brands tell. Like there's, you know, it's about the stories that like the community, like, that the community tells, I think, and the camaraderie of like being in this hobby with other people. Like that's the thing that's always been attractive to me about watch collecting is the, like the community behind it and like the knowledge that people share with each other. So yeah, that's kind of my take on that.
What about you?
I don't know. I'm less community driven, I suppose, as a person. Like that is not the thing that I necessarily keeps me going with stuff. Like I don't really, you know, when I'm doing research, I'll read X, Y, and Z. But I'm in it for the object itself.
Sure.
Perhaps.
Sure. Okay.
So. So yeah, I don't really know where that puts me. In the I mean, I find that all fascinating, and that just, I don't know if that play into my personal collecting so much, yeah. You know, that said, if I was the person with, if I was Jeff Bezos and I had an unlimited amount of money and I wanted to find that watch, mm-hmm. that exact watch that was the first to summit, you know, like then that perhaps, perhaps that would be of greater personal significance. But that said, all those stories are fascinating. It's amazing work that people are doing. It's just, yeah, it's like, it's not what I guess draws me into watches. I think maybe it's because I'm also at this point like too close to the brands in some ways. Like I just marketing and all that stuff. It kind of like, it's might be BS in a lot of the, you know, it's just like this plane, that person, this guy, that ambassador, yada, yada, yada. It's a watch. How are you going to wear it? You know, that's like, this watch summited Mount Everest. Not that watch. I mean, like 150 years ago, yeah, you know, yeah, it's like this one went to the deli on 7th. And, you know.
Yeah, you should not put like that should not be the driving motivator for like why you want these things. Because like, again, at the end of the day, if you get this or you end up with that thing that you have put on this pedestal for so long, but you are still the one owning mm-hmm. it and you still have to like wear it in and out every day if that's your only watch, or maybe you've got a few watches, I don't know, like you still have to like it on your wrist. Yeah. And because then it's just something else, then it's like stamp collecting or something that you just like get and you put like under mm-hmm. the glass and like you enjoy it and appreciate it, but you don't like, you like watches are used, meant to be used and worn, but I guess some people have a different approach, right, where they get the watch and maybe it is like of historical significance and they keep it under the glass and observe it every now and then, I guess. I don't know.
I think the story is like the cherry on top, like the story behind the watch, or mm-hmm. like the community that you know, that helps influence you, you know, whether or not you end up getting the watch or not. I mean, because I won't say that the story doesn't matter, because I mean, because in a way it's kind of like branding, you know, the story behind your brand can sometimes be the reason why people ultimately end up liking your brand. But if we're just being real about it, unless you're a person that just buys things, like you said, to be like, oh, this is the most expensive thing, or because a celebrity has it, for the most part, you're going to want to buy it. The first thing that's going to attract you to it is because you like the way that it looks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then you can, maybe more importantly, and I know I hark on this all the time on this podcast, like build your own experiences in it, which will mean infinitely more to you than whatever the brand says you should care about in the heritage of that watch. Mm-hmm. Which is maybe on tenuous footing.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I think a good example, because one that's just so widely known is like the Speedmaster, right? You know, it's the Moonwatch. It is heavily marketed as the Moonwatch. On the case, it says Moonwatch. There's 40 anniversaries a year about something relating to space. I've never bought one once that I gave a crap that had anything to do with space. That's all cool, but that watch is a gorgeous watch, and that is end of it, you know? And I've had them, I've sold them, I'll probably have more. At no point will it be like, you know, it's because it went to the moon that one time on, you know, on top. But like, I understand though, if it is for you, that's, I'm not saying that's a wrong thing. I'm just saying for me personally, if that watch looked a different way, and there's other watches with great, you know, all these, many different stories. I mean, whatever, Challenger Deeps and like these other things and other space watches that people don't give much credit to, Fortis Cosmonautis and things like that. Like that's actually, you know, that those watches that got, you know, sent into Space Lab and all these other things, like people aren't geeking out over those the same way. And I think it's probably because the watches themselves are kind of more challenging looking, you know, they're not, and they're not from a marketing powerhouse like Omega at the same time.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I love the stories associated with Sea Dwellers,
but yeah,
I would never own one because I just can't pull off the watch.
Yeah,
you know, and it's that does not like that bums me out. It's not like that takes away from my appreciation of all the stories of like
you didn't get that John Cameron experience.
Kind of yeah, like you know, come on, like that's yeah. I mean, I enjoy like all that kind of stuff, but again, it doesn't move me. It doesn't compel me to like I need a Sea Dweller. If I did, it would be because I had all the money in the world, and I would just keep it under the glass so I could like look at it and appreciate it every while or every now and again. And that's a good point about the Speedmaster. I feel the exact same way. It, like, I like the Speedmaster for what it just on its own.
Yeah.
I could have nothing on the case back. I wouldn't give a crap. It brings a little more, maybe just it like adds a little value to it to me, like in my head, just because like I enjoy NASA and space stuff and I geek out a little bit over
space
that.
Space hat right now.
Space. But I don't, yeah, that wouldn't have pushed me over the fence.
Yeah, I mean, the watch still has to succeed on its own merits sans story.
In fact, okay. I've read the whole 14-second timing of the blast might not have even been with
Speedmaster. Oh, right. What was the... Yeah. There's some controversy around that?
Yeah, because the guy was a big Rolex fan. He had a GMT that...
The same people claiming that this also all happened in a soundstage somewhere in Nevada.
Yeah. Well, that was gonna be my next point. Yeah.
Directed by Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
How cool would that have been, though? How much more dramatic would it have been? I mean,
seriously, yeah. Better production values.
Yeah. No, I think that, and that's a totally different story for the other day. But I like the Speedmaster for what it is, and that doesn't take away from what I like. I'm sure Omega would not. Maybe we should take this out. Omega people like coming in here behind me right now.
We're saying Omega, you have a great watch with or without the story.
Yeah. But who cares about all that stuff? Yeah. Smaller brands make equally interesting watches that don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to pump into like the story. You know, should that take anything away from them? No. Like, no, not at all. And there's lots of watches like that out there. Maybe they should be Grails. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But... at any rate, I want to thank everyone that that took the time to wrote in. We got a ton of comments. Only 5 of you actually just put a watch, by the way. I was expecting like half of them to just be some crazy watch and like super expensive watch. But there's only 5 of you. And should I read them off here? So these were the watches when we asked for Grails. So SEP. 1603, fitting username for his answer, vintage Rolex. Okay.
Just in general.
Any vintage Rolex. Okay. Well, I'm guessing 1603, which is an old Datejust.
Okay.
Terex 24, GWG 1000.
We didn't look that up, so we don't know.
Yeah, apologies. I'm assuming.
It's a great watch. It's a fantastic.
Fabulous choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, R Danger 7, Tudor Pelagos 58 black dial, if it exists. There you go. I was expecting more of this.
So that's a future
more
watch.
More of like,
yes,
this is the watch I want.
A hypothetical watch.
Yeah, a watch that doesn't exist, that is my grail, that needs to be made yet. Tudor, you heard him. You heard the man.
You got to be careful what you wish for, because every time they do, they'll be like, oh, no, the loom. You know, why do they make it that blue?
So, yeah, you can never win. Ben Chapman underscore 18 says Seiko Pogue. All right.
That's a good one. That's, another space watch.
Yeah, yep.
Classic.
Miles underscore A underscore W, Rolex Daytona. Come on. Yeah.
Really? I was expecting.
Really?
I was expecting like Paul Newman's specifically, like
maybe that's what like, he, that's maybe
or
Paul
just
Newman's in, Paul Newman.
Well, there's Paul Newman's Paul Newman, which it would very much understandably fall into that sort of mythical grail level for various reasons. But then just the Paul Newman in general, because it's so expensive. I think because it's so expensive that they're just held right and sort of exotic. I maybe their moment is sort of over in the zeitgeist, at least as like the go-to watch at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody tell the auction houses so they can come down into normal territory for pricing.
$100,000 last week.
Yeah, and then there's one more. I guess I'll give a shout out to the watch case PR should be unobtainable to a much higher degree. For example, HA2 is not Grail, but HA1 is.
Okay. So interesting. I actually don't know what the Creedor H1 is. Per se, I'm only familiar with the two.
Well, that's what makes it the Grail.
Yeah, maybe it's like a short production or something like that. Yeah. Who knows? Interesting. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you to everyone who took the time to write, and we really appreciate it and had a really fun time.
May the Grail be with you. Is that a thing? We say that. May the Grail be with you.
May the Grail be with you. Yeah. It's mixing up the Harrison Ford, Star Trek, and Indiana Jones stuff, right? Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a non-statement. It's not a thing anyone says. So maybe now they will.
Well, now it's a thing. and there was some good discussion happening on the comment section in the Instagram. Mm-hmm. So let us know your thoughts as usual. And thanks for tuning in. Until next time. See you later.